Well, BBC Radio 4, it's a little after 3:30. Now, comic fringes and another short story from this year's Edinburgh Festival Fringe. Today, a curiously unsettling tale by the late Ian Crichton Smith, who's probably best known as a poet, though he was also a prolific writer of short fiction. Recorded earlier today at the Pleasance Cabaret Bar, Crawford Logan reads Mr. Heiner.
It was 10 o'clock at night, and Mr. Bingham was talking to the Mirror. He said, "Ladies and gentlemen," and then stopped, clearing his throat, before beginning again, "Headmaster and colleagues, it is now 40 years since I first entered the teaching profession. Will that do as a start, dear?"
"It will do well as a start, dear," said his wife, Lorna.
"Do you think I should perhaps put in a few jokes?" said her husband anxiously. "When Mr. Curry retired, his speech was well received because he had a number of jokes in it. My speech will be delivered in one of the rooms of the domestic science department, where they will have tea and scones prepared, and it will be after class hours."
"A few jokes would be acceptable," said his wife,
"but I think that the general tone should be serious." Mr. Bingham squared his shoulders, preparing to address the Mirror again, but at that moment the doorbell rang. "Who can that be at this time of night?" he asked irritably.
"I don't know, dear. Shall I answer it?"
"If you would, dear." His wife carefully laid down her knitting and went to the door. Mr. Bingham heard a murmur of voices, and after a while his wife came back into the living room with a man of perhaps 45 or so, who had a pale, rather haunted face, but who seemed eager and enthusiastic and slightly jaunty.
"You won't know me," he said to Mr. Bingham. "My name is Heiner. I'm in advertising. I compose little jingles, such as the following. When your dog is feeling depressed, give him Dalton's. It's the best. I used to be in your class in 1944-5. I heard you were retiring, so I came along to offer you my felicitations."
"Oh," said Mr. Bingham, turning away from the Mirror regretfully.
"Isn't that nice of Mr. Heiner?" said his wife. "Won't you sit down?" she said.
And Mr. Heiner sat down, carefully pulling up his trouser legs so that he wouldn't crease them.
"My landlady, of course, has seen you about the town," he said to Mr. Bingham. "For a long time she thought you were a farmer. It shows one how frail fame is. I think it is because of your red, healthy face. I told her you had been my English teacher for a year. Now I'm in advertising. One of my best rhymes is, 'Dalton's dog food makes your collie obedient and rather jolly.' You taught me Tennyson and Pope. I remember both rather well."
"The fact that I don't remember you," said Mr. Bingham, "says nothing against you personally. Thousands of pupils have passed through my hands. Some of them come to speak to me now and again. Isn't that right, dear?"
"Yes," said Mrs. Bingham. "That happens quite regularly."
"Perhaps you could make a cup of coffee, dear," said Mr. Bingham. And when his wife rose and went into the kitchen, Mr. Heiner leaned forward eagerly.
"I remember that you had a son," he said. "Where is he now?"
"He is in educational administration," said Mr. Bingham proudly. "He has done very well."
"When I was in your class," said Mr. Heiner, "I was 11 or 12 years old. There was a group of boys who used to make fun of me. I don't know whether I've told you, but I'm a Jew. One of the boys was called Colin. He was taller than me and fair-haired."
"You are not trying to insinuate that it was my son," said Mr. Bingham angrily. "His name was Colin, but he would never do such a thing. He would never use physical violence against anyone."
"Well," said Mr. Heiner affably, "it was a long time ago, and in any case, the past is past, and for the present, it may be equally unpleasant." "Colin was the ringleader, and he had blue eyes. In those days I had a lisp which sometimes returns in moments of nervousness. Ah, there is Mrs. Bingham with the coffee. Thank you, madam.
Mr. Heine says that when he was at school, he used to be terrorised by a boy called Colin, who was fair-haired, said Mr. Bingham to his wife.
It is true, said Mr. Heine, but as I have said, it was a long time ago and best forgotten about. I was small and defenceless, and I wore glasses. I think, Mrs. Bingham, that you yourself taught in the school in those days.
Sugar? Said Mrs. Bingham.
Yes. As it was during the war years and most of the men were away, I taught Latin. My husband was deferred.
A mo, a mass, a mat, said Mr. Heine.
I remember I was in your class as well. I was not a memorable child, he added, stirring his coffee reflectively, so you probably won't remember me either.
But I do remember the strong rhymes of Pope, which have greatly influenced me. And so, Mr. Bingham, when I heard you were retiring, I came along as quickly as my legs would carry me, without tarrying. I am sure that you chose the right profession. I myself have chosen the right profession. You, sir, though you did not know it at the time, placed me in that profession. Mr. Bingham glanced proudly at his wife.
I remember the particular incident very well, said Mr. Heine. You must remember that I was a lonely little boy and not good at games. Keeping wicket was not cricket. Bat and ball were not for me suitable at all. And then again I was being set upon by older boys and given a drubbing every morning in the boiler room before classes commenced. The boiler room was very hot. I had a little talent in those days, not much certainly, but a small poetic talent. I wrote verses which, in the general course of things, I kept secret. Thus it happened one afternoon that I brought them along to show you, Mr. Bingham. I don't know whether you will remember the little incident, sir.
No, said Mr. Bingham. I can't say that I do.
I admired you, sir, as a man who was very enthusiastic about poetry, especially Tennyson. That is why I showed you my poems. I remember that afternoon well. It was raining heavily, and the room was indeed so gloomy that you asked one of the boys to switch on the lights. You said, "Let's have some light on the subject, Hughes." I can remember Hughes quite clearly, as indeed I can remember your quips and jokes. In any case, Hughes switched on the lights, and it was a grey day, not in May, but in December, an ember of the dun sun in the sky. You read one of my poems. As I say, I can't remember it now, but it was not in rhyme. "Now I will show you the difference between good poetry and bad poetry," you said, comparing my little effort with Tennyson's work, which was mostly in rhyme. When I left the room, I was surrounded by a pack of boys, led by blue-eyed, fair-haired Colin. The moral of this story is that I went into advertising and therefore into rhyme. It was a revelation to me. A revelation straight from God that I should rhyme as I was taught. So you can see, sir, that you are responsible for the career in which I have flourished.
I don't believe it, sir, said Mr. Bingham furiously.
Don't believe what, sir?
That ever happened. I can't remember it.
It was Mrs. Gross, my landlady, who saw the relevant passage about you in the paper.
I must go immediately, I told her. You thought he was a farmer, but I know differently. That man does not know the influence he has had on his scholars.
That is why I came, he said simply. Tell me, sir, he added, is your son married now?
Colin?
The same, sir.
Yes, he's married. Why do you wish to know?
For no reason, sir. Ah, I see a photograph on the mantelpiece, in colour. It's a photograph of the bridegroom and the bride. How should we not hail the blooming bride with her good husband at her side? What is more calculated to stabilise a man than marriage? Alas, I never married myself. I think I never had the confidence for such a beautiful institution. May I ask the name of the fortunate lady?
Her name is Nora, said Mrs. Bingham sharply. Nora Mason.
Well, well, said Mr. Heine enthusiastically. Nora, eh? We all remember Nora, don't we? She was a lady of free charm and great beauty.
But I must not go on. All those unseemly pranks of childhood that we should consign to the dustbins of the past. Nora Mason, eh? And he smiled brightly. I'm so happy that your son has married Nora.
Look here, said Mr. Bingham, raising his voice.
I hope that my felicitations, congratulations, will be in order for them too. I sincerely hope so, sir. Tell me, did your son Colin have a scar on his brow, which he received as a result of having been hit on the head by a cricket ball?
And what if he had? Said Mr. Bingham.
Merely the sign of recognition, sir, as in the Greek tragedies. My breath in those days came in short pants, sir, and I was near-sighted. I deserved all that I got. And now, sir, forgetful of all that, let me say that my real purpose in coming here was to give you a small monetary gift which would come particularly from myself and not from the generality. My salary is a very comfortable one. I thought of something in the region of... Oh, look at the time. It's nearly 11:30 at night. At 11 o'clock at night, the shades come out and then they fight. I was, as I say, thinking of something in the order of...
Get out, sir, said Mr. Bingham angrily. Get out, sir, with your insinuations. I do not wish to hear any more.
I beg your pardon, said Mr. Heiner in a wounded voice.
I said get out, sir. It is nearly midnight. Get out!
Mr. Heiner rose to his feet.
If that is the way you feel, sir, I only wish to bring my felicitations.
We do not want your felicitations, said Mrs. Bingham. We have enough of them from others.
Then I wish you both good night, and you particularly, Mr. Bingham, as you leave the profession you have adorned for so long.
Get out, sir!
Mr. Bingham shouted, the veins standing out on his forehead. Mr. Heiner walked slowly to the door, seemed to wish to stop and say something else, but then changed his mind, and the two left in the room heard the door being shut.
I think we should both go to bed, dear, said Mr. Bingham, panting heavily.
Of course, dear, said his wife. She locked the door and said, Will you put the lights out, or shall I?
You may put them out, dear, said Mr. Bingham.
When the lights had been switched off, they stood for a while in the darkness, listening to the little noises of the night from which Mr. Heiner had so abruptly and outrageously come.
I can't remember him. I don't believe he was in the school at all, said Mrs. Bingham decisively.
You're right, dear, said Mr. Bingham, who could make out the outline of his wife in the half-darkness. You're quite right, dear.
I have a good memory, and I should know,
said Mrs. Bingham, as they lay side by side in the bed. Mr. Bingham heard the cry of the owl, throatily soft, and turned over and was soon fast asleep. His wife listened to his snoring, staring sightlessly at the objects and furniture of the bedroom, which she had gathered with such persistence and passion over the years.
Crawford Logan. Crawford Logan was reading Mr. Heiner by Ian Crichton-Smith. The producer was David Jackson Young. And there's a final short story from the Pleasance Cabaret Bar in Edinburgh tomorrow afternoon at 3:30.